Welcome back to the Law of Attraction Secrets podcast. I'm your host, bad bitch, Natasha Graziano. And today in the studio, we have one of my favorite guests who I'm actually so proud of. But beyond that, we just did a really cool book signing. She did a book signing and I was her conversation partner. So I got to kind of host at her event. It was so dope. She's on a book tour right now. Her book just came out. She is a doctor. She is a top entrepreneur. I don't know how she has time to do this. She's a mama. You know her from Dallas Housewives, people. Welcome to the show, Tiffany Moon.
Hi, guys. I'm so glad to be here.
We are so happy to have you, honey. How are you?
I'm doing well. Doing all the things.
How are you fitting this all in? Like, you are
It's wild.
Everyone speaks to you like, I'm in another hotel room.
I put in the wrong hotel room of my DoorDash food. I put in the last hotel room. And then I was like, wait, no, we're at a different hotel now. Crap.
No, babe. Oh, my God. Food's really important. Like, when you travel.
Food and sleep.
That's crazy.
When you're traveling and doing all, like, basic necessities.
Yes, that's
staying
it.
Staying hydrated.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Sweetie, I said to my girl in the car on the way here, I said, do you know that when people ask me, how do I keep my energy? Genuinely, the truth is food and sleep. Yeah. I don't have those two things. I was eating my lunch on the way here between two things.
Yeah.
Because if I don't have that, I can't function. I don't do caffeine. I don't fuck with crazy anything to, you know, give me that energy. I just use my own energy.
You have enough, I think.
Right.
You don't need any caffeine. Please don't take anything else.
No.
You would be crazy.
Literally, babe, I'm already like filled with life. Okay, yes. So look, girl, this is about you and you are really motivating and inspiring a lot of people. You're a coach. You look after incredible. Wait, let's go into that a little bit because you said it was really cool the other day. You were like, I guide other doctors.
Yes.
What's that?
I mean, mostly my clients are other female physicians, but that's just because that's who I know.
Right.
I would take other people, but they don't usually come to me because they don't know about me. So I teach a lot of mindset to female physicians because we are sort of taught in medical school, like you do this, you go to undergraduate, then you go to medical school, then you go to residency, then you do a fellowship, then you're an attending. And it's like, we're kind of led down this false path that's the path to success. And some people get to the end of all that after they've invested 12 to 15 years of training to be where they are, hundreds of thousands of dollars of medical student loan debt. And they're like, this isn't really that joyful. Like, I work a ton. The patients are upset. Insurance companies are dictating what I can and cannot do as a doctor. I barely see my family. I'm burned out. I'm not happy. Like, shit. And then they come to me and I say, well, what else are you passionate about? Could we explore this? Could we do this? And I just give them other ideas.
I love that.
Because female physicians are so stuck in the fact that, like, I can only be just a doctor.
Wow.
And I'm like, no, baby, you can do so many other things.
I love that, girl, which is why I guess Joy Prescription started. Let's talk about that.
Yes.
Your book. It's called Joy Prescription.
Yes.
Which I love because you are a doctor. I mean, you're a badass doctor too. You're also a bad bitch. Like, you just got, and you're a Leo. I love this. So you wrote your book. Tell me what that book is doing for other people.
Okay. So the reason I wrote Joy Prescriptions is because I felt like I had learned so many lessons throughout my life that I wanted to share with other women.
Yeah.
Like, to release themselves from competition and comparison and the feeling like they're not good enough. To let go of some of the things that have happened in their past. Like, maybe some of our pasts are not idyllic. Maybe we experienced childhood trauma or abuse or domestic violence. Like, don't let that define you. You can become someone on top of that. Don't let that be your sad story and just hang on to it for the rest of your life. Like, overcome it.
It's so true. It's like they say that you can redesign your story at any point. In fact, what they say is that your past does not have to become your future.
Right.
Your past is just a part of who you are. Like, when you look at your story, that's your story, but it is not who you are. Like, I don't have to be the abuser I suffered as a kid. I don't have to be the traumatized girl who was sexually abused, all these things, which is true. But I decided to redesign my story and re-be who I want to be. Who do I want to be? And I redesign it. I go to the drawing board and I decide, who is Natasha Graziano? Like, what does she do? How does she show up in the world? How does she become somebody greater? You design who you want to be.
Yes.
And I love that because you do that exact thing. You're like, I am not going to be that person that I was told I was going to be.
Right.
Who were you told you were going to be as a kid?
Oh, I was told that I was going to be quiet, subservient, very demure, very mindful. Because in my culture, it is one of conformity. You don't want to stick out. You want to put your head down, go with the masses, not speak up. If something's wrong, you're kind of told, deal with it. And as a girl, I was really praised for being quiet and subservient and academically precocious. You know, it was like, oh, Tiffany has straight A's, you know, and that was what I got patted on the head for. And so that became my identity. Wow. I'm a good student. I make straight A's. I didn't know anything about creativity or kindness or curiosity. All I was just a straight A student. Like, that was my life's goal, was to keep making straight A's. And I didn't know anything outside of that.
What's crazy is, and what's really impressive, you went to med school, am I right?
Early.
At 15.
College at 15. Med school at 19.
Yeah.
So when I graduated as a medical doctor, I was only 23. Some of my classmates were like well into their 30s. And I was this young baby doctor. I had no experience in the world except, you know, being a student and having my university friends. And all of a sudden they slapped these two letters behind my name. And I was like, what am I supposed to do now?
That's wild. What does it feel like that day when you suddenly have like DR or MD before your name?
I was getting shitless.
Girl.
Because they add those two letters, but nothing actually changes in your life. You know, you don't like wake up that morning and be like, I'm a doctor now. I woke up and I was like, I hope I don't harm somebody. Like, I don't really know what I'm doing exactly. Yeah, and so I had to like grow into that. And I had a lot of imposter syndrome, a lot. Like my whole life, I always had imposter syndrome where I felt like I was going to look around and I'm like, they are going to find me out and then I'm going to get kicked out of here. And I just never thought that I was good enough, never thought that I belonged until finally I did some mindset work with coaching, therapy, podcasts, books, you know, that's like my own joy journey. And I finally like cured myself of the imposter syndrome. And I finally was like, you know what? I do belong here. I have a seat at this table. I earned my seat at this table. And it was just this shift in mindset. And now I don't have imposter syndrome anymore. I'm cured.
I love, so that's what joy prescription is.
Yes.
Finding who you are, overcoming imposter syndrome, overbecoming who you were and deciding this new version of you and being them.
Yeah.
Like being it until you become it, which is the name of my book, actually. So that's like, that's incredible.
Yeah.
I love it. Joy prescription. Yes. This is great.
Okay. Read it, and you will also be cured of your imposter syndrome.
Well, I know because I have the book. I was one of the people who actually got to have your book early.
Early.
And I love it. The quotes inside it are so powerful. Like, if you just want some inspiration in your day, I feel like flicking to a random page, seeing what it's writing, oh, yeah. Like, it just bounces off the page, and you feel like, I can do this today, baby. Like, I got this. This is so full. It's so filled with life. And it's so filled with you.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Dallas Housewives for a minute.
Uh-huh.
When that happened, how did that happen?
It was never my dream to be on reality TV. In fact, I was very hesitant about going on the show. The way the Housewives works is that at the end of every season, they ask the current cast members, do you have any girlfriends who you think would be a good fit for the show? And the current cast members are supposed to like nominate their friends.
Right.
So I was nominated several years in a row, but I was like, I don't want to do that. Like, I was working full time. My twin girls were like 3 years old. I think we were like mid potty training.
And how old are they now?
10.
No, girl.
I know.
Why did I think you know. They were tiny?
No, they're big. They're like
little
humans.
Little when they were young.
Yes, yes. So then they kept asking me. And finally, the third year that they asked me, I told my friend, I was like, fine, I'll talk to casting, but like no promises. So I talked to them. The first thing is a Zoom. Then they flew me out to LA and had a green screen interview. And then they came to my house with a bunch of cameras and like filmed me and my family hanging out and stuff. And then they were like, we want you to be the newest housewife of Dallas. And I was like, shit. Because I didn't think I was actually going to get it.
Girl,
you know?
This is such a great story. So how long were you on the show for?
I was only on the show for one season.
By
I was
choice,
on
though. You just
season
decided.
Five.
Right. So you were like, that's it.
And then they put the show on an indefinite hiatus. So it's not on right
it's
now.
It's not on.
Like, there's no Dallas. Yeah.
What?
People, girl, I don't know. Ask Andy Cohen. Call Bravo. I don't know why. I don't ask why anymore. You know, sometimes things happen.
Yeah.
And I quit asking the word why. Because generally speaking, you're not going to find out.
Yeah.
And also, it's not going to affect what I'm going to do.
That is a really good thing in life. I think we should all learn that, like taking out the word why. Because you know you also on why? A lot of the time, they are either going to bullshit the answer.
Right.
Or they don't want to tell you.
It doesn't matter. Sometimes there is no why. Sometimes there is a why. But is it going to affect your next step? Are you going to change your course depending on what the answer to why is? And if the answer is no, don't ask why.
Wow, girl, that is so good. I love this. Okay, so going back to Joy Prescription, when you started writing it, like, did any emotion come up from your
own? Oh my God, so many feelings.
It was
so
emotional, many feelings. Right?
It's very emotional. The first few chapters were the hardest because one, they were the earliest and I kind of wasn't into my writing groove yet.
Yeah.
And also those were the chapters about my childhood, wow, about moving here from China, having a difficult childhood.
You moved here from, you weren't born here?
No.
That's insane. So you speak full Mandarin?
I mean, not full, not good.
Your sister speaks Mandarin.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I could have a conversation, but let's...
She gets to have a conversation with her.
Let's just say that it's not
my
good.
My little, like, sister. Oh, my God. Wow, that's beautiful. Wait, yeah. So you moved here.
When I was 6 years old.
Were you sorry, this is a really crazy question. Like, shit, we may have to fucking take this question out. But were you there when the whole, like, having a child who was a girl?
Yes.
Right, so we can talk about this.
Let's talk about it. Let's talk about it.
Because, yo, this is like a whole thing. Oh, sorry, babe. This is like a whole thing.
Okay, now we got to divert a little. Okay, so back in the 80s-ish... in China, they wanted to control the population because there's too many damn people and the country can't support it. So the government decided that as a couple, you were allowed one child. That's it. You were allowed one. They actually restricted your reproductive rights. I know, but this was in the 80s in China. So you know.
What happened to somebody?
So what happened is that because boys are quote unquote more valuable, they were aborting a lot of girls if they found out pre-birth that it was a girl. And a lot of baby girls were being...
Wait, smug. For real?
Yes.
At birth?
Yeah.
Wait, out?
Yeah.
Why?
Because then if you got rid of the girl, then you could have the chance to maybe have a boy. And in China, when you're the boy, whoever you marry when you're in your 20s or whatever, the girl becomes the quote-unquote property of that boy's family.
Got it.
Her filial obligation is now to her husband's family. If her mom and her mother-in-law are sick, her duty is to care for the mother-in-law because she's married to the man. Like, her own family comes secondary. So if you have a daughter, when she gets married, you basically lose her. Do you know what I'm saying?
I get it.
And so it's more profitable to have a boy.
Okay.
So they were killing a bunch of baby girls in China. So much so that now the population is skewed. So it's like 55-45 or something and all these men can't find a wife. And I'm like, well, maybe you shouldn't have killed all those baby girls.
I can't believe this is actually, hearing it.
Like, yes. So my father, although he will not outrightly admit it, I think was disappointed that I lacked a penis.
But you were
I grew up with the...
But hang on. Before you go to tell me, I want to hear this. I know this is even more deep, but you weren't like that your parents weren't worried for your life when you were born?
No, I mean, as long as they... didn't kill me like nobody else was.
They were allowed to kill their own kids.
No, not allowed. They were leaving baby girls like in the fields.
But that was like what they wanted. The like
they just didn't want to have to raise like if you're poor and the government says you can only have one child per couple and boys are seen as more you know, I mean, so it's
God,
not
girl, people, so you made it out.
Oh, yeah. I mean...
What were you going to say now? You were going to say...
I grew up with the feeling that my dad was always disappointed that I wasn't a boy. And in fact, can I tell you, I have twin girls. And when they were like maybe 3 or 4 and I was getting closer to being 40 years old, he was like, are you guys going to try for another one? And I was like, another one what? And he was like, kid. And I was like, no, dad, I'm done. And he goes, don't you want to have a son? And I was like, I don't. I love my girl. Like, I don't see them as daughters. You know, God gave me 2 beautiful children after I struggled with infertility for so long.
People IVF babies?
No.
It was natural.
Yeah, twins.
But you didn't even choose two girls.
No, I didn't choose. Oh my God. No, I didn't choose anything. That like,
thing where you can selective whatever.
I didn't select. Yeah.
God just blessed you. You were meant to have your baby girls.
And then that's it. You know, that was enough. That I had such a complicated pregnancy. I was on bed rest. I was hospitalized. You know, like, it was a complicated pregnancy.
I had preeclampsia with mine.
Oh, I didn't have preeclampsia, but I had...
At the end.
I had an incompetent cervix, and so we were trying to, like, keep them in.
You couldn't get up.
I had bed rest.
Yeah. I heard about it.
Yeah.
I had the severe preeclampsia, which I didn't have the first time, but it was from stress, and I was hospitalized after, like...
It was a lot. And so I feel blessed, but when somebody asks you, like... Don't you want to have a son? Doesn't that sort of give you the inkling that, like, they think you should or something
makes
like
you
that?
Feel,
right,
yeah.
Like, oh, well, am I missing something or did I not? It just, maybe makes I read feel, too much
no,
into
I think,
it.
I think the truth is I would have read it the same. So how did you handle that?
I just ignore it. You know, now it's like I'm all about protecting my peace and not engaging in conversations with people that are not going to go anywhere. And I already know that conversation's not going to go anywhere. And so I'm just like, we are done trying for children. Thank you for your concern. Next question, please.
Love
like,
that.
It's just shut it down.
Love that.
Yeah.
Love that. Well, you've actually kind of, I mean, I'm sure someone in the audience right now is feeling like, wow, you're teaching me how to listen to my own parents because there's a lot of pressure, you know, from parents in different cultures. I know in my own culture and different cultures, there's like so many pressures to have kids and to do this and to get married. And like, I mean, I'm a real fuck up in terms of how my family see me. I've been married twice. I've got two baby daddies. Like, I don't even see that as a fucking problem. I see that as like a superpower. Like you get with me and it's buy one, get two free. Like literally I'm three for the price of one. Like that's
well,
how
I met your baby girl and she's precious because I was holding her and playing with her at the photo shoot.
She loved you so much.
Yeah, I made her laugh. She was giggling. And I was like, look, babies and dogs. If my dog growls at someone, I don't fucks with them.
Yeah.
Because dogs know and babies too.
That's
like
so
they can read like your energy or something.
Yes.
And babies. And we were laughing, playing, and I was like, I like this.
Yeah,
baby.
She really loved you. It was so beautiful. I knew. I was like, the fact my daughter loves you like that. She loved you. It was like so comfortable with you. But that's because you have two girls, which is really powerful. So hang on. Having that as your past, you then went through not only imposter syndrome to become a doctor, but probably who your identity was.
Yeah.
Like, who the fuck am I if I felt so almost neglected in one way and not wanted in one way? You know, many people go through this in different ways with their own families, right? And like, look how well you've turned out. So what was that thing that you actually did? Like, break it down. How did you overcome that? Like, what was the imposter syndrome trigger? What did you do? Like, if someone was like, okay, you overcame it, but what did you do? People always ask me that. What was the magic sauce? Like, what did you put in the water to make it help you overcome what you
did? Oh my gosh. I wish I could tell you it was a magic sauce and that one day a light switch just went off and all of a sudden I was like, I am worthy. It wasn't like that. It was this joy journey that I talk about in the book, which took probably a good 3 to 5 years. Lots of therapy.
Wow.
Like 40,000. I added up my therapy bills the other day.
What was it?
40,000. I was like, I could have
bought
$40,000.
Wow.
Therapy's expensive.
Therapy's really expensive.
And they don't take insurance.
Coaches are more expensive.
Yes. Yeah. And I have an executive coach. She has a program. It's $17,000. I was like, sign me up. People don't want to spend money. But the thing is, when I started doing coaching, and I am a conference goer, like I love going to conferences. I meet the best people at conferences. And people are like, you're crazy. My husband thought I was crazy. I would spend like $5,000 here, $8,000 here, $17,000 on coaching. And I was like, babes, the return on investment will be tenfold. I guarantee
Amen.
You. The people I will meet at this conference, the connections I will make, don't even worry about this $5,000. Like, that's some piddly nonsense.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
100%.
And people who play small and that are like, oh, I couldn't possibly spend that amount of money. It's insane, whatever. Ever since I started doing therapy, coaching, conferences, podcasts, reading a lot, mindset work, meditation, I have expanded so much that when I look at the previous person that I was, it looks like I was living in black and white, and now I'm living in full color.
Dang, this is so good. How long did it take you to write a book?
2.5 years.
Are you kidding?
Yeah. I thought about it in late 2021, and I connected with my literary agent who told me to write a proposal that he pitched in 2022. Right. And I started writing in, like, you know, June of 2022. And I finished in 2024.
Holy moly.
And now it's 2025.
You wrote it yourself. You didn't have a ghostwriter.
Uh-uh.
That's why. That's incredible. You literally wrote it yourself.
I had a very good editor.
It's different.
She was like my you know, ask her, does this make sense?
Yeah. But you wrote it.
Yeah, which was a lot.
Amazing.
A lot.
Okay, girl, how do you fit in being a mama to these beautiful twins, a wife, filming, your entire influencing life, and then, hello, you're a full-time anesthesiologist.
Well, now I'm part-time. It's 3 days a week. I used to be full-time. Right, but 3 days still feels like full-time.
No, it's a lot.
It's still
three
a days, lot.
Girl, it's a lot.
Because I'm in the hospital by 6:45 a.m., and I'm leaving somewhere on the order of 4 to 5 p.m.
Not literally sit there and go, oh, my God, I'm about to go under, and she's on Dallas Housewives. Oh, my gosh, she's really famous. My doctor's famous. Are they not, like, tripped out by this?
Because I work at Dallas County's public hospital, so, like, half my patients don't speak English. A lot of them are undocumented. We have a lot of jail. Like, if the fight breaks out in the jail and some guy breaks his jaw, he comes to my hospital.
What's the difference? Well, I'm British, so I've not... There's
people that are uninsured, by and large.
These are all uninsured people?
Most.
And who pays? Medicare.
I pay because I'm a Dallas County taxpayer. I pay for my patients.
Yeah.
I mean, some.
That's crazy.
It's taxpayers, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Whoa.
Yeah, so I serve the underserved community. So I'm not doing, like, fun surgeries.
Right.
I'm like, doing trauma, cancer, bad things.
Wow.
People who really need it.
Wow.
So my patients never recognize.
How do you know when you're doing that cocktail of, like, is it a whole art?
Well, yes.
So how
can
anesthesia
give me, like, is like, I want 70% science and 30% art.
Whoa, talk about this, because I just had surgery, like, a couple of weeks ago, and I was, like, on the phone to my anesthesiologist the night before he called me, and he was like, right.
Do you have any problems?
Right.
My medical history, what do you take?
So tell me about the art part. That's so interesting.
You know, there's the science of it, but everybody's different, and everybody has different interactions with the medications, different medical comorbidities, and that's where the art comes in. I really get to know patients. I see them as a whole. I try to see them as people and not just a patient on the table, and really treat them holistically. Some patients are not nervous at all, and some patients are like I've had patients, like, crying, being like, doctor, like, I'm not gonna, you're gonna wake me up, right? And I'm like,
I've met that patient too, literally. Yes. Like, I was screaming, crying.
Yes, like, hysterical.
Yep, on the floor. Like, I just couldn't, I was like, just do it.
And then other people sometimes, like, guys, they're like stoic, and I'm like telling them, oh, we're gonna do this, and I'm gonna put on some monitors, then I'm gonna put a breathing tube, and he's like, look, doc, do what you needed to do. Like, I don't want to hear about it. Like, some people do better with more information, and some people do better with less information.
Yeah, I actually do better with less. My guy told me the full run. He's like, okay, we're about to go in, but he did it in a very hypnotic way, by which point they said, we're just going to relax you. The coolest thing about it was, before we went into the surgery room, I was just in this, like, area, medical area, but still, like, on the bed.
Yeah.
I thought they were like, we're just going to give you something to relax you before we go into surgery.
It's the pre-op cocktail.
But I was already out.
Yeah. It's midazolam. It's Versed. It's a benzodiazepine. We usually give 2 milligrams. We give that, and people are like, la, 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 la. They're feeling
gone.
So good.
I don't even remember, girl.
Yes. It causes anterograde amnesia. So basically, you're like blackout drunk. You don't remember. But you're still awake and breathing. But people have confessed to me after I gave them the Versed.
Yeah.
Some guy told me he killed a guy.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Wait, who was... I need to call my girlfriend, Brielle, and be like, babes, what did I talk about in that room?
Yes. Because once you get the Versed, it's serum.
What? It's truth serum?
It, like, dissociates.
No, yes. That's actually not funny. Like, what did I talk about in that fucking... Well, I've never killed anyone, but, like...
I don't know what you said, but do know that we keep it in confidence. So whatever it was, we don't tell it.
You had to keep in confidence.
Oh, I keep... I'm a vault, baby. You cannot break me.
When he said that...
I was like,
he killed someone. What? So wait. And people confess crazy shit.
Yes.
Why do they decide in that moment? Why do they brave?
So there you go asking why again. There
right.
you go. What'd I tell you about asking why? Don't do it.
But babe, I have to ask why this is so good. You're a doctor. Like, medically, one asks crazy questions because
they're disinhibited.
Right.
It's like having too many drinks, right?
Right.
Oh, I did that. I was drunk. Whatever. Yeah. You're disinhibited. Your frontal lobe is no longer controlling the show.
Is that
now it's your primitive?
Like if a man goes and does crazy shit.
Look, if he's cheating and he's saying it's because I got drunk, he was going to cheat anyway, and he just needs an excuse.
But it was not because his front lobe's missing.
No, it's not missing. It's not missing. He just didn't want to use it. He just wanted to think with his other brain.
Right.
Yeah, but that's, that does it's no
when
excuse.
People get drunk.
Yes, because it disinhibits you. So whereas otherwise you would normally make good decisions for life, like not cheating.
Yeah.
You have a couple too many drinks.
Yeah.
And you're like, maybe it's a good idea if I step, you know what I mean? It disinhibits you. It takes away your ability to make wise decisions. That's why so many people don't fuck with alcohol anymore. They're like, you know what? That ruined my life. It made me make poor decisions. Right. I couldn't go to work the next day. It ruined all my relationships. I no longer drink. I'm like, smart decision. Yeah. I applaud you for that. I still drink. Because
you
I don't make too many poor decisions when I drink.
Right.
Like I don't cheat or whatever. Yeah. Sometimes I'll, you know, say something probably I shouldn't have said, but it's like very minor.
It's fine.
And I usually, when I drink, I stay home. Like I don't go out.
Right.
You know, so I'm just having wine with my husband and fooling around. You know what I mean? I'm not like
and
out.
And maybe then tell him shit you really didn't want it to know, but that's the worst.
My husband knows everything, okay?
He American?
He's Korean.
Cool.
And I'm Chinese, so our babies are Korean.
That's so cute. They're so beautiful. I love it. Yeah. Like you just did that thing on your page with the little Korean bunny thing. What was that? The little toy? Oh,
La Boo Boo.
La Boo Boo. What the fuck is La Boo Boo?
That's a very good question. It's a fucking cult.
Your video was so good because you were like, what even is
my
this?
My friend
has a coat.
Sent it to me. It
like
is
like a Pomeranian.
It's like, do you remember?
There's one on the floor right
do
there.
Do you remember like in the 2000s we collected Beanie Babies from Thai?
Yeah, Furbies?
Yes. I had one in an acrylic box and it was like $100 for a Beanie Baby.
Yes.
Okay, these La Boo Boos apparently in the store, which is called Pop Mart, which is overseas, not in America.
Yeah, in Japan.
I think it's like $10, something on the order of $10.
I think they have
okay,
Japan,
people are reselling this shit on StockX or whatever, the resale, you know, for like 60, 80, $100 for like a limited edition La Boo Boo.
Oh my God.
It's like a thing. So I have one. I have one on my Birkin. I have a La Boo Boo on my Birkin.
And we have many Birkins. We're going to talk about that in a second.
They all need a La Boo Boo now, apparently.
Oh my God, it's so cute. No, so, I have to get, it looks like a Furby. Okay, it's a combination between a Beanie Baby and a Furby.
It's like if a Beanie Baby and a Furby had sex.
And they would make that.
That.
Okay, we just have to show it. Someone just bring over the fucking La Boo Boo.
On you know Birkin. What? I'm going to get you one.
Girl, I love you. Yes.
Even if I have to go to StockX.
Okay, look, this is your bag, which is so heavy. Do you carry your life around with you?
Yes, it's so heavy.
Lord, this is like your 20,000. So, how many Birkins
do you
even have?
You're not supposed to lift over 10 pounds.
I'm lifting
doctor's
my baby.
Orders.
It's so bad. But wait, show them La Boo Boo.
Oh, La Boo Boo. This is La Boo Boo. Hold it up
a little and you more. Actually put a Prada
hat.
How did she find that?
I don't. My friend sent it to me.
Babe,
I don't.
This whole thing
I did
is
not,
so cool.
I know.
I love you.
I don't even. You know, there's all these trends and stuff. And this is the thing. I live under a rock.
Right.
Like in my operating room days, and I don't watch the news.
Right.
So if something doesn't come across my social media, like I don't be knowing about it.
That's like me.
Like I stick my head in the sand a little
that's
bit.
That's good. Why do you not watch the news? Because I don't
it
watch
it. It depresses
hear
me. And yes. I have terrible anxiety. Like truly. Like I have medication. I have diagnosed anxiety disorder. But generally speaking, my anxiety benefits my patients because I worry about them. So then I prepare things. I take extra good care of them. I'm very vigilant.
Oh, interesting.
But in my life, it causes a lot of stress for me.
Yeah.
And when I turn on the news and people are bombing and this school shooting and I'm like, I can't.
That's
like,
the same reason I don't watch it because it gives me anxiety.
I do want to help and these are real issues. But like right now, like I can't. You know, I need to focus on myself and my family and just,
girl,
I don't have the bandwidth to solve the world's problems right now, you know? And so I just hide.
It's crazy. I found out about anything that happens in the world through social media.
Me too.
But that's how it should be. Like, it pops up on my YouTube in a short, which is a lot better than how the news is telling it, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because like some social media YouTuber, like, AI is going to take over the fucking world is so much easier for me to handle than handling it on TV. Like, everyone, you need to bottle up. You need to sit. in your house and block the doors. Like, I would just be terrified.
Yeah, like, you know? Sometimes, like, it's scary and the apocalypse is coming. But, you know, we live in Texas and we have a gun room.
Oh,
so I'm like, let's just go into the safe room. It has its own security system. We have all the guns. There's food, there's water, there's batteries, there's chargers. And I'm like, let's just, if the apocalypse is coming, you'll find me. I'm going to lock myself in.
I'm considering, like, if the AI is going to move at this rate and literally take over the world, because they're going to take over of humans, we'd be better on a farm, like real far out, like literally.
I've moved to Montana
again. Like, just somewhere.
I told my husband, I got so fed up the other day because everything was going wrong and I was just having a day. And I was like, babe, I was like, forget all. I was like, let's just move to a farm in like Montana, have all this land, like raise sheep and goats and cattle and all this stuff and just like move away from civilization.
I literally have those urges.
My husband was like, the only one. You would last 6 months. And I was like, okay, fine.
He's right. But you know what? There are moments when we feel like we want to run away.
Yes.
And that's a really good point. It goes back to your book. Because we do feel like, I often go, you know what, fuck all this. I actually just want to go live on an island with my kids.
I know.
And just like eat coconuts every day and not ever have to worry about like first world problems. Like I just want to worry about like the fact that I need to catch a fish and eat it. Like I literally want to worry about how I'm going to make a fire. You know, like I know that's probably even harder to do than like the bullshit we go through. But like first world problems are fucking annoying.
I know.
Like, it, you know, you get it.
Yeah.
And then your brain is like fuzzed and there's people and so much going on. Sometimes I just want to run away to a forest and like with my kids and just, you know, live in a hut and live a peaceful life. But then I'm like, nah, you know what? I'd come back.
You'd also be bored after
well,
6 months.
I went for 1 month to the UK and I was there like for Christmas in the countryside with my family. And when I say living with no public transport, I had no car in that time. My mom obviously and them had a car, but it was in the middle of the countryside. Like my neighbors, this is how I grew up, were sheep and cows. I went back there for a month. And when I say I loved it, but boy, by that fourth week, I was like, please. I was calling her. I was like,
I'm ready to re-enter civilization.
Yes, I'm ready to re-enter civilization. I need to come back. Like I was like, I have to get back. But I thought, oh yeah, this would be great. Like I'll be cool. 4 weeks. I was like, shit, you get itchy. But here's the thing. I think that proves taking time for yourself, retreating, getting away from the chaos of the world, getting away from the rat race and going and relaxing and spending time preserving your soul and your energy somewhere at some point, whether it's a month, 2 weeks, or even a week, going out of civilization and doing something for you is so important. What's three things that you do for you every day without fail or every week? Three things, whether it's walking, meditation, what are the things you do?
Sleep. Like I aim for 8 hours of sleep. I don't always get it, but I do try to prioritize it. Daily movement of some sort, even if it's playing with the dog, 20-minute walk. You know, I don't always get to the gym. Mm-hmm. And then the third thing would be a practice of gratitude. Every day naming something tangible that I am grateful for because it keeps me grounded and it keeps me from wallowing too much in my misery and feeling sorry for myself. When I'm able to be grateful for all the things that are happening around
me. I can't believe how similar we are. Literally, those are the same three things.
Stop.
But I will add in scripting. Mm. I script the gratitude. I write about it. And then I believe into existence and write into existence my next steps. So I start with, I'm so happy and grateful now that I have this beautiful friend, Tiffany, in my life. I'm so grateful for my producer, my children, my the fact I'm breathing, the fact I'm alive. And then I go into, I'm so grateful now that I bought my second home, third home, fourth home in this place. I sold this company. I did this. And I write a whole list and like the future as though it's already there. That's what scripting is. So I did my whole TED talk on. And so I like to write it because there's science behind it. As you write it, you activate the ventrolateral prefrontal cortex of the brain and it starts to bring to fruition the goal faster than anything else just by writing it down pen to paper and in the past tense.
Okay.
I know, girl. I'm gonna do it. I love this.
Yeah.
Oh my God, so cool. What's one of your favorite quotes from the book to wrap up today's show?
For one of my quotes, I want to share with your audience that the joy is in the journey and not at the destination. You have to enjoy the journey because I spent so much of my life in those earlier years not enjoying the journey, hoping that the joy would be at the destination. And when it wasn't, I was angry, I was resentful, I was depressed. And now I live every day on this joy journey enjoying the actual journey.
That's so beautiful. Thank you, Queen, for sharing. I am so excited for you with your book. It's out now, guys. Do you have the book? Can someone pass me the book? I really want to show it.
Oh, I didn't bring it. Did you bring it?
No.
We oh both my forgot God. To bring it.
That often happens when you're in the middle of a book launch and yeah. like it just came out.
I guess
out.
I should
like,
bring it everywhere, but I left
everywhere.
It.
Everywhere.
I know.
You launching and have a spare one in your bag?
It was very heavy already. So
well,
I did.
What the actual fuck do you carry around
a
with
laptop,
you?
A laptop. Because I'll
right,
be the
right,
fucking
right.
working. Yeah. Because it's course, a 20-30 minute Uber ride, and I'm not just gonna look out the window, bitch. No, I got work to do.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, so I'm like laptop out, and I can get way more done on a laptop what than I can on my phone.
I'm the opposite. I get everything done on my Girl. Phone. I just have it in the background. What's the difference? What do you
spreadsheets,
do?
Spreadsheets.
Oh, okay.
Google spreadsheets.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
I can
yeah,
type
yeah.
much
yeah,
faster on a yeah, laptop.
Yeah, yeah.
I type 100 words per minute. I just want to say.
Oh,
so
you're
I and
super
I can't
fast.
Type that fast with my thumbs, but I can type fast on a keyboard.
I can type super fast with my thumbs, and in fact, to that point, I have like a whole. Anyways, this. Sorry, but it's been muscle.
You need a medical consult for your thenar imminence.
Yes,
because it's overworking. It's overworking.
But how do you? Yeah, how do you cure that?
You have to stop.
Oh,
and get some massage and physical therapy.
Really?
Yes, girl. You got the Twitter thumbs is going crazy. We got to take care of you.
Yeah, that's the thing. So I can go and get like treatment for it.
Yes, get you a nice hand massage.
Okay, yeah. More. Okay, yeah. More of them.
I prescribe for you some joy
Thank
and
you.
Some hand massage and relaxation.
Love this. Thank you, my love. Oh my God, I'm going to do this today before all of these wonderful things I have this week. Crazy week. And we just did that amazing book launch and
yes.
on tour.
Get the book, guys. Woo! Joy prescription.
So exciting. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in today. The book is the most beautiful yellow and pink. Matches her outfit. You won't miss it. It's got her gorgeous face on the front. Dr. Tiffany Moon Vival, thank you so much for tuning in today. The links are below to all of her handles. All of the book that you want to get, you want to read, give it to a friend. It's a great gift. Like, just go up to someone and be like, I gift you joy prescription. I gift you the prescription of joy like you just did. I think that's a great tagline. We love it. Thank you so much. I hope you've enjoyed the show as much as I have. Send it to a friend if there's somebody that you believe will benefit from today's show. Thank you so much for coming. Beautiful Tiffany.
Thanks for having me.
See you again soon.